Hey, Internet. He's John. I'm Mark. Happy holidays. This is the Enthusiasticast, the web show where we tell you about books that we really, really like. This week, we're going to catch up on some housekeeping items, maybe take stock of what books we've read in 2010. It may run a full episode. It may run short. It may run long. We'll just kind of see how this goes, play it by ear. John, you have a list of your five best reads of 2010. But before we get into that, let's revisit some of the previous 40 episodes, 41 episodes so far, I guess. So in episode two, I recommended, or I was really enthusiastic about Daniel Suarez's Demon, and then you read it, you liked it, and we talked about it in episode 11, right? And then we've kind of dropped off in terms of, it's been radio silence in terms of, like, reciprocated recos since episode 11. So, over the course of the year, have I been able to convince you of anything other? Well, have I been able to convince you to read anything other than the Suarez books?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's been four books. I mean, it's tough, right? Because anytime I read one of your recommendations, I'm reading a book that I can't then talk about on the show because you've already talked about it. So it's, they have to be kind of fit in. Once I've stockpiled a bunch of books that I know I'm going to want to talk about on the show, I feel I've got some breathing room. I always try to fit in one of yours. So there's been three and a half, I guess. I haven't finished The Star Is My Destination yet by Alfred Bester, which you recommended in episode 19. I'm reading that on my phone, so I read about two pages every time I wait in line somewhere. So I've about halfway through. I'm really enjoying it so far. I'm totally digging it. There is something about it which makes me like it even more, and this was something that you deliberately didn't mention in your recommendation. So a mild spoiler for anybody who cares about that sort of thing. It is a sci-fi retelling of The Count of Monte Cristo, which is a book that I love. And it is a fantastic retelling of The Count of Monte Cristo. So if you imagine a spectrum of sci-fi retellings of classic stories, this would be at one end, and the Pam Anderson film Barbed Wire, which is a sci-fi retelling of Casablanca, would be at the other end.
That's a wide spectrum. I don't know if it's useful, but entertaining.
It is if you've seen Barbed Wire. However, that's a small, select, disappointed group of people.
Well, I will say that Roger Ebert, I believe, gave Barbed Wire a thumb and a half, maybe. He gave it thumbs. I don't know. There were thumbs involved.
I'm not going to make fun of Roger Ebert.
Okay, so I convinced you to read some books. You actually read them, which is even more impressive.
Yeah. So there's three more that I've read that I just, so these ones get the double stamp of approval. Await Your Reply by Dan Chon, and that was actually a recommendation that you made on a show that we never published. So people don't know that you recommended that to me, and I read it, and that was almost one of my top five books of the year. Like, that is such a fantastic book. For people who don't know about it, it's sort of three separate narratives. It's got this fantastic opening where there's a man and his son, and they're driving in a car, and the son's hand has been cut off, and they've got it on ice, and they're racing to the hospital. And so it's both literary, and even though it doesn't have traditional thriller stuff happening in it, it's got like a thriller pace, and the writing is just, it's heartbreakingly awesome. It's just, you know, the quality of the language that he's using. And it ranges all over the place. And it talks about identity and how we perceive identity and how technology is changing how we perceive identity. But at the same time, it's never too thrillery. It's never too sci-fi-ish. You know, it's right in the here and now. And it's such a great book, and I never, ever in a million years would have come across that on my own, so I'm totally totally chuffed that you recommended that. And then I read War by Sebastian Younger. Is it Younger or Junger?
We'll go with Younger.
We'll go with younger. Yeah. And it's weird because I was having a really tough time with nonfiction this year. Just none of it was really gelling for me. And War actually has a very similar structure, completely incidentally, to Born to Run by Christopher McQuarrie, even though the subjects couldn't be further apart, War being about war and specifically the war in Afghanistan, and Born to Run being about ultramarathon running. But it has that same, you know, there's the real world, real-time story that he's telling about kind of extreme personalities in an extreme situation, and then there's their personal backstories, and then there's the historical backstory, and then there's the sort of the social scientific examination of the larger modes and the larger issues at play. And for some reason, that combination of ingredients in a nonfiction book just really works for me. So that was a fantastic read. And then finally, and this one I was putting off for a couple of reasons. One, because you'd already talked about it, and although I expected to love it, it was just going to kind of be wasted love because I couldn't come on the show and talk about it. And the other, because it's part of a series, and I felt like as soon as I read one, I was going to want to read more, and that was going to be more books that I couldn't talk about, that I was going to be taking me away from other new things. And that's The Killing Floor, which is the first of the Reacher novels by Lee Child. And it wasn't just you that recommended this book to me. It was a bunch of different places simultaneously seemed to be talking about this book, because Lee Child had two Reacher novels out last year, so it was obviously a big year for him and a big year for the series. And I went into it with very high expectations, expecting to love it, and sometimes that can be a recipe for disaster. But man, it is so good. Oh my God, it's good. It's like he is this fantastic character, and I'm sure that, you know, you said all of these things when you were talking about it, in the sense that he is this incredible tough guy, but he's also really, really smart and really, really measured. But then he's not just sort of some, you know, Schwarzeneggery, Stallone-y kind of, you know, muscle-bound automaton. He actually makes these great human connections with people. So some of the things that I enjoyed about the book were the connections that he made. There was a romantic slash sexual relationship that he gets into, which is done incredibly well in a kind of a mature, non-exploitative way, which is unusual for this genre, I would say. And then there's these male friendships that he developed. There's this great scene, and this isn't giving anything away, but it's a character who he's met earlier on and didn't care for, and then these guys share this incredibly subtle, restrained sort of hey, thank you moment without anybody actually saying hey, thank you. And he thinks to himself, you know, I don't know how I ever could have hated this guy. And it was just such a great, you know, men in action moment. That kind of thing was throughout, and I loved it. Not to mention the mystery angle itself was a complete Playfair mystery with an interesting crime that was totally fascinating to learn about. And man, they're just as fucking fantastic as everybody says, and people should go and read them. The women in my office love this book. They're completely, and I shudder to make this pun, but I can't stay away from it, they're completely hot for Reacher. They can't stop. It's like everybody loves these books. So, yeah.
Well, we'll talk a little more Reacher and a little more Unger later on.
All right.
Yeah.
Are they coming back in the top five?
Well, we'll...
Maybe?
We'll see. We'll talk about it. So, have been swayed by more of your recommendations than I've been able to follow through on. So one of the big destination books this year has been Room,
right,
by Emma Donoghue, which you talked about a couple weeks ago. There has been, you know, here we are at the end of 2010, and this book is showing up everywhere on all kinds of best of 2010 lists. Mm-hmm. I've had more people tell me to read this book in the last 2 weeks. And I'm like, I know, I have a copy. It's like, it's waiting for me to pick it up. I've also had very interesting kind of, side conversations, because people have been reluctant to read it because of their fear of what it's about, you know? Okay. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I'm absolutely not going to go there. And we kind of touched on that when you discussed it.
Yeah, if you listen to the recommendation, there's enough to know what you may or may not be getting into.
Right. And, you know, some people have, anyway, so I kind of put this on my calendar to have read by this episode, and sadly I haven't finished it. So Christmas has kind of gotten in the way. I'm not at the hope part isn't quite, so
right.
it's still early.
Right.
I am enjoying it. It is turning out to be very, very moving and very touching and all those things. So, so it's not 100% done. So I can't completely put a check mark beside it, but that's definitely, happening. And then the other big book that, that's been on my list for months is, Asterios Polyp. Right. And so you,
that was a long time gone. That was,
yeah, you told me about this book after it was one of the books recommended in the Advent book blog in 2009 as one of the best books of last year. You followed up and passed on your copy, and you just said, you know, you are going to get this. I was on board having heard it from both you and Dan, and then I heard it from another friend, Amy, recently. She was just like, you must phone me when you complete this book, right? But I, you know, honestly, I didn't think that I was ready for it, right? And so I've had kind of three break-in experiences with graphic novels. First, I read The Watchmen. After talking at length with you about it and about where it came from and about what was happening in it, and read that with the utmost curiosity and really enjoyed that book, and got a sense of the meticulous care that went into preparing each panel of that story. And then I read David Small's Stitches in graphic novel form, and of course was enthusiastic about it on the show. And after reading Stitches, I think I said to you, like, oh, you know, I get it now. I get what this medium's about. And so that was kind of the gateway onto, I'm going to butcher his name again, David
David Mazzucchelli.
Thank you. So I was just like, okay, it's time. So sat down with this. It is phenomenal. It is really, really phenomenal. And I, you know, can't say that my reluctance was misplaced. There's just something about reading graphic novels that I just need to be in the right... I just need to be in a different headspace, it seems. And I'm not always in that headspace.
Right.
Which seems odd, just because I love going to movies for escapist reasons kind of thing. And so... So once the switch was flipped in my head, sat down with that, and would recommend it, but of course that's coming after a long preamble of saying how I was reluctant, so I don't really know what that means. But
you shouldn't have been reluctant, but I almost feel like, I mean, I think so. What the four graphic novels that you've read so far in your life are Watchmen, Parker the Hunter, Stitches, and Asterios Polyp. You should stop now. Like, it's not going to get any better than that.
Well, this is the thing. So you've recommended a whack more of titles to me that I haven't got to, and I've been meaning to. You know, like I saw, I saw Joshua Ferris's new novel on the bookstore table today when I was in.
Yep.
In the store, and I was tempted to pick that up because we had talked about it. You know, Stephen Amsterdam, Things We Didn't See Coming, I think you were enthusiastic on the show about.
Yeah, the same episode as Asterios Polyp.
Yeah, I'm jazzed for that, just haven't got to it. You know, A Man with the Getaway Face, The Outfit is now out.
Yep.
And you were talking about The Man with the Getaway Face as a plug.
Which is like, that's like the first part of that book. They just released it separately.
Yeah, as a plug lead in to that coming out. And that, of course, is the sequel to
The Hunter.
The Hunter, you know. So the Outfit is a destination book for me sometime soon, and then, you know, and then Hater, right? I'm still keen to get to Hater, and funnily enough, I haven't read One Day yet.
You really should read that before the movie comes out.
I know. And
I'm gonna mention One Day again later.
Well, One Day is so I have it in audio form, and so there's just a couple things that are queued up before that. So anyway, so I kind of feel that I'm letting you down a little because I really should be bringing the noise to your list. Because you've been doing a great job, but I just haven't got around to a lot of the stuff. And then the other book is the World War Z book.
I love that book. That was my favorite book of 2009.
That is hopefully gonna. Anyway, I'm gonna go on a nice run right after Christmas. Of good solid genre fiction. I've been on kind of a nonfiction kick lately, and I want to kind of switch over after Christmas and go genre for a while. So hopefully I'll be able to pull that in at that time.
That should work out well because I think I'm going to flip the script and go the other way because I've been doing a lot of genre lately.
Yeah, well, perfect. So at the heart of the show this week, we thought we'd run down kind of the top five of 2010 and. You know, we talked about this. You were like, "Oh, I could easily do that," and I was just like, "I don't know if I could easily do that." So, let's talk about how you formed your list, and then we'll just kind of knock it out from there.
I have actually a list of all the books that I've read and when I read them. So I kind of, you know, went down that list and round robined it, and ended up with my top five. There's a bunch of caveats along the way. There were some books that I kind of put in the penalty box early on. The three big ones were The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest, which I felt, it's a book that I read in 2010, but that's of a piece with the Millennium Trilogy, the first two parts, which I read in prior years. So I left that one out, and it was the same thing for Scott Pilgrim's Finest Hour, which... Again, I read that book in 2010, but the series I've been reading for years, and it's really the series that I love and not specifically that book. And the same thing for Mockingjay by Suzanne Collins. I read that book this year. I love that book, but I love the series more, and it's really more, you know, the cumulative effect of Hunger Games, Catching Fire, and Mockingjay that I love. So I felt it wasn't fair to talk about those three in the context of, like, top five of the year. Also, what's the point of recommending the third book in a trilogy or the sixth book in a whatever you call a series of six books? So there was some honorable mentions. There were some things that almost made it but didn't for whatever reason. I mentioned earlier that Await Your Reply almost made my top five. It was so close. And The Killing Floor almost made my top five. I think as I sit with it for longer, like I just finished it a few days ago, and so I think that may be in there. Like, you know, if you ask me this question again in a month, that maybe that something's dropped out and The Killing Floor has moved in. There was a book called The Card Turner by Louis Sicard, who wrote one of my all-time favorite books, Holes, which was turned into that movie with Shia LaBeouf, and it's just a fantastic, technically it's a young adult novel, but I just think it's a great novel. And The Card Turner was not quite up to the level of Holes, but it did have a scene in it that just crushed me and broke my heart, and so I felt like it deserved an honorable mention because, like, that is a scene that I'm going to remember forever, even though the book itself, well, I mean, it was a good book. I really enjoyed it, but it wasn't up to the level of Holes. It wasn't all up to the level of that scene, but I wanted to mention it. And then finally, I read Spook Country and Zero History by William Gibson back to back, and they kind of formed one book in my head, and I think I enjoyed it more as like that one super book. And so because I can't recommend that experience to anybody, I can't put that in my top five because I don't know that either of those books read by themselves necessarily would have been in my top five if I had stopped with Spook Country Would that have made my top five this year? I don't know. And if I'd read Spook Country years ago and just read Zero History this year, would that have made my top five? I don't know. Together, they were fantastic, but I couldn't separate them. So to get to my actual top five, after talking about every other fucking book I read, we've got in the number five spot, Born to Run by Christopher McDougall, which I recommended in episode 35. That's a nonfiction book about ultramarathoning, and basically I started running seriously this year, and so that, I think, book, that's just specific to me. I really recommend that book. I think it's fantastic for all the reasons that I mentioned in that episode, but that's one where I just think that it was like right book, right time in my life, right thing, and so it wins for that. What about you? How did you make your list, and what's your number five?
Oh, geez. So there are more notable books of 2010, and really, as I look them over now, they're books that I thought about a lot and that stayed with me rather than the best ones.
Okay.
You know, like, I really enjoyed Zaytoon by Dave Eggers and stuff, but, you know, I haven't really thought of that book since I put it down, kind of thing.
Right.
So, so my number five is actually, I've just got Cormac McCarthy listed here in my notes. And after reading The Road last year and seeing No Country for Old Men the year before, I think.
Yeah.
I also have two close friends who Cormac McCarthy is their favorite author of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they rave about him all the time. And so I got into McCarthy in a big way in 2010, and I would say that my number five is the Border Trilogy. And so that consists of three novels, actually. And so it's All the Pretty Horses, Cities of the Plain, and The Crossing. And, you know, reading that experience was devastating. Reading those books... that experience of reading those books was devastating.
I'm laughing
as I say it now, but like, as you could expect, well, I expected actually. I didn't know a lot about McCarthy before I read The Road,
right?
And so I was expecting more like Sam Shepard like Western stories. And instead, he's like, as you would expect, after seeing The Road, he's like filled with like melancholy and bleakness, right? And it's, that doesn't sound like a good time, but it is powerful, powerful stuff. And so I haven't been enthusiastic about it on the show because I've kind of been hoping, well, I actually read All the Pretty Horses 2009-2010 crossover, and then I read the rest of them at the first of the year. And I'm kind of hoping that we'll have someone on to talk about Blood Meridian.
Okay.
Hopefully sometime in the new year, but that's definitely on my reading list for 2011. And so if we aren't able to have someone in to talk about it, then I plan on bringing that up when I get to it. So, your number four.
My number four is a book that you had said that you wanted to get to based on my recommendation, and that's One Day by Dave Nichols. And it's just a great book. It's just neatly pulled off. It's not flashy. It's a neat conceit. And the thing about that book is it ends like a fucking boss. Like, a lot of... pulling off the ending seems to be one of the hardest things to do in fiction, and not to oversell it, but One Day really, really does it well. And, you know, there's a movie that they're filming right now, or maybe they finished filming it, and it'll be released soon, starring Anne Hathaway and Jim Sturgess, and there's a production still that's floating around the web from that, and in it, Anne Hathaway is wearing a dress, and because of the dress that she's wearing, I can tell what scene it is in the book. So, I mean, a couple of things there. One, this book was so well written that I remember the dress that the character was wearing in a scene, even though maybe there was two lines spent talking about the dress. And B, it looks like they're being pretty faithful to the book in the movie, which means not only is it a great book, but it could be a really great movie as well. So that's something.
She is doing the Oscars this year, so there is going to be buzzy.
People are going to talk about it, that's for sure. So what is your number four, sir?
Well, I've actually got all the Lee Child books. And
okay. So really, these are just your top five favorite authors of 2010.
Well, no, it gets weirder after this, actually. So I endorsed Killing Floor, as you mentioned, in episode 14. I've since gone on to read the dozen of them or whatever, and so that was a big part of my reading in 2010. And just two things to kind of denote and to follow up on, basically having talked about it previously, having only read one book, and that is I found that the series got really, really good around just after 2001, when Child was kind of at his inventive best trying to not deal directly with 9/11. So he was getting all twisty and creative and stuff, and there was a good solid run of four or five books in the early 2000s that I think are the best of the series so far. The last few have been pretty labored, and I think my favorite of all of them is Without Fail. 2002's Without Fail. Right. So the second thing I've kind of decided, and you know, I'm not positive. I'm not so sure that these are actually going to be good movies. And it's interesting because you've just had this experience of reading the first one, and the cinematic qualities are clearly there. Mm-hmm. And the character is definitely movie star material. But since reading that Child's, Child cites Alistair MacLean as an influence, or I think Alistair MacLean's, you know, on Wikipedia listed as an influence, so take that for what it's worth. And now that I know that, I can see nothing else reading the series now. And so I read Alistair MacLean books when I was a kid. I read them like candy, much like I'm reading the Child novels now. And the thing with MacLean and what he did over and over again in The Guns of Navarone or Ice Station Zebra or Where Eagles Dare, all good movies in their own right, by the way, was he used a remote, isolated location to kind of limit the possibilities of the fictional world that they were that he was presenting. And Child does the exact freaking same thing over and over again. He draws a box around his plot, and he places things in that box. And so you're like, okay, that's cool as like a self-imposed writing restraint. And he can pull that off in text. But in a movie, I think it would just come across as really corny and ham-fisted nowadays. Like, you could have done that in the 60s, but yeah. You just need... It's like, I find myself going... He explains away why things aren't possible in his world because of some geographical restraint he'll put on it on the story. So in The Killing Floor, it takes place in this tiny town, right? And there's like, you know, and so that's that constraint, and he uses that device over and over again. And you know, aside from that being used in Roadhouse, the best movie of all time. Effectively, I just don't think that it's going to translate. So I think if they are going to make a movie, they're going to have to do an original story, or they're going to have to do like what they did for Master and Commander and do like an amalgam of a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a tough page to screen transition. I mean, so much of, they could do a voiceover, but I think that it might be cheesy in a way that it works in the book. Like, just from the get-go in The Killing Floor, the way he's evaluating the cops when they come to arrest him and talking about their technique and all of that was just... It turned what could have been a really drab scene into a really interesting scene. And I don't know how you do the same thing in film.
Right, and like, if you get Dwayne Johnson to play Reacher or whatever, right? Like
much as I love The Rock...
that's just not going to work out. So,
it's just not.
So I'm so familiar with his tropes and stuff now that I'm just like, oh, there it is again. And not that it's a crutch. Like, he's able to be effective with it. It's just I'm now fairly positive that it would just make for a really slow-paced film. And that's just not going to fly. Anyway, Lee Child, the Jack Reacher books, my number four.
Okay. So my number three is Room by Emma Donoghue, and there's not a lot that needs to be said. You already mentioned again that that's another one of my recommendations that you're part of the way through. It's been sort of universally acclaimed, so it's on my list at number three because the acclaim is warranted, and it's a fantastic book. And that's all I have to say.
Cool.
You're number three, sir.
Well, my number three is actually two books. And
okay.
It's like two mulligans, really. So Flawless is probably the weakest of the books that I recommended this year. But I can still stand behind Flawless because it's such a good story. Dexter Filkin's Forever War and Unger's War.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to take back, actually.
Particularly
after reading Chris Hedges' book for episode 40.
Huh.
And I'm reconsidering those reads because they're just not substantive enough. And they're actually deceptively unsubstantive. And I knew that to a certain degree, and we kind of talked about that when we talked about War, or I was thinking about that when I was talking about War. But these guys, you know, both of them went to America's, like, two hotspot war zones,
mm-hmm.
and they came back and they basically sat down and they wrote about what they saw, and that was it, right? That you know, they're like, okay, you know, Johnny G.I. said this to Sergeant Sammy, and we're going to write it down in our notebook, and that's going to go in the story, wherever it fits, right?
Right.
And by the looks of what happened to Hedges, you know, Filkins particularly, because he works at the New York Times, if he would have done anything differently other than report the objective facts of his experience there, he would have fucked himself, right? But I'm just like, you know, in thinking about it, months later, it's like a crazy lost opportunity, right? And it's like, what kind of responsibility do you have to say something, to like move people, to like to do something? And so they, you know, they both had the means and the access to tell a different story. And I'm not saying that they needed to come back and tell an anti-war story or tell, like, you know, it's just that they consciously decided that they were gonna just stick with the facts, stick with the objective truth as you know, perfected in American media, and go with that, right? And so I just think, looking back, I'm gonna be on the wrong side of history, like, championing these books, right? Like, they're just really forgettable because they have nothing to say. You know, they're not important. And I was enthusiastic about them at the time because I was just like, oh, yeah, this is taking us into a place that we don't have access to, and we're getting insight, and this is great, and they're really well told, and it's really exciting, and it's all those things. But now I'm like, now I'm reconsidering. So I don't know if that's fair play. I don't know if, like, 6 months from now I will turn around and spin around and be, like, totally up for it. But, you know, something like Matterhorn, I feel is going to be up for a reread. I don't feel that either of these two books are going to be worth it.
I'm not saying that you're wrong about any of that, but I think then that, I mean, it all comes down to the context of the book. Like, what do those books have to do? You know, what is the box in which those books have to be important in order to be good? Do they have to be important in order to be good?
Well, no. So I just think that both authors had the opportunity, like, did the dodge, right? They were like, they were ducking. They were ducking, I think. I think both of them were ducking, either consciously or subconsciously.
I was going to ask, do you think they did it on purpose, or do you think that they just...
Well, it was just ingrained. You know, you see Unger's press tour, and he would say that it was totally purposeful, everything that he did. He didn't want to tell the story of the Afghan people. He wanted to tell the story of the soldiers and all that stuff, right? But then when you read, so having just read Hedges' account of what it's like to be in the New York Times newsroom and how objectivity is a bit of a joke, right? It's a bit of a pacifier in certain contexts because it's not applied evenly, you know. And there's, anyway, I don't want to get into journalism 101 here, but it was, you know, it's very clear. In that episode, I was just like, it's fantastic how he's not political about what he's saying, and he's just reporting, you know, what he saw in a way that is political. Like, it's so subtle, it's brilliant, is what I originally thought. And now I'm just like, oh, it's so subtle because he was scared, right? Mm. So, anyway, I'm reconsidering those books. I've been thinking about them and my position vis-a-vis them for a while, and particularly War, because it was enjoyable, and I was enthusiastic about it in a big way, and it made other people that I know that read it uneasy, and they were like, how do you reconcile this? Like, we can't really put our finger on why this is troubling, but, you know, it has something to do with the kind of, like, Stockholm syndrome of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, you know, I don't really see that. I see a really good story, but in the bigger context of what's of that campaign and of that war and of the stories that could possibly be told with that kind of privilege, it just seems that it's a bit of a dodge. So
okay, you know what? I'm really interested the next time you hit some nonfiction. just to revisit this. Once you've had a little bit of distance from the death of the liberal class.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe my politics are just... Anyway, it's all a big...
I'm not saying that you're going to change your mind again. I just...
Tumblr.
I'm curious.
Yeah. And I've got a copy of Born to Run here, so we'll see.
I don't think it's going to change your mind one way or the other.
Okay, so
it head on.
I'm expressing, you know, guilt for being enthusiastic about good books. Is that a crime? I guess not. So what's your number two?
My number two is, you know, going back to episode 2 and then episode 11, Demon, and then Freedom TM by Daniel Suarez, which was one of your first recommendations and one of the first ones that I picked up and read. And those books, they won me over on just their plots and their pacing alone. But then they had this incredible scope to them and just a willingness to follow through on the implications of his own ideas, which I was kind of surprised by, because I guess I was used to, you know, this is in a fictional context, I was used to writers backing away, especially in science fiction, from the implications of their own ideas, right? That there would be, if you took an idea that and followed it through to its logical conclusion, it just sort of went to this big crazy place, and that the writers either were unwilling or just didn't feel that they had the chops to deal with that. And maybe Daniel Suarez, because he was a first time writer, it was like, you know, he can fly because he doesn't know that he's not supposed to be able to fly. And so he just did it, and he went fucking balls to the wall. And in the context of a book that I was already enjoying in a limited scope, for it to just blow up that way was crazy fun for me. And I enjoyed, as I said, you know, when I called it back and wanted to do a whole other episode about them, I just enjoyed the hell out of them. So that's my number two.
Nice. So my number two is Hunger Games.
Sweet.
Yeah. And I kind of have Stieg Larsson fatigue at this point. And, you know, and
just in that you want the world to stop talking about him. Or?
Well,
Because we finished those books a long time ago, so
yeah, that's true. And it's
the race is over. You can stop now.
Well, I just wonder if he's, you know, is he flirting with overrated territory at this point? I don't know. But the Harry Potter movie, you know, it's just out as well, and I kind of have a Harry Potter headache. So I'm like, the one book that I'm telling friends about and that I'm gifting this Christmas is The Hunger Games. And so when I think of, you know, when I think of the spirit of what goes into the Enthusiast cast, this series best captures it at this moment, right?
I agree.
So I'm not onto Mockingjay yet, so it could all blow up in my face or whatever, but in terms of like that
next year, you know, this will be the war and forever war.
It will be the mulligan, right? Just be like, oh, I was so misguided.
Can't believe I ever recommended The Hunger Games. They killed those Smurfs. It just, it was horrible.
But, like, you know, what I love about book selling is just, like, putting a book in people's hands and, like, literally, you know, being like, you must read this, and here are the five reasons that you would like it, and you would like it, and you would like it. And that just, like, makes me feel good, and that's obviously the thrust behind the show. And so I'm at that place with Suzanne Collins right now. So short and sweet, my number two.
I'm hearing you. I can't argue with that at all. But I read The Hunger Games in 2008, so it was on the show that I wasn't doing in 2008.
Right. You've got Hunger Games fatigue.
No, I don't, actually. I recommended that book last night. I was talking to somebody and I was like, you know, how old are you? 11? You're old enough for The Hunger Games.
Exactly.
So, but my number one is actually somewhat of a cheat, I guess, maybe in that it's a book that I recommended again on a show that that never saw the sound of day. And that is The Book Thief by Marcus Zusak. And every other book on my list is either a book for a specific kind of reader. Like, I think there's books on my list that, even though I think they're all excellent books, somebody might not enjoy. So they're either for a very specific reader or they're just not for everybody. Not true of The Book Thief. The Book Thief is the one book that I've read that's on my list, and I can't imagine anybody who wouldn't like this book. I think this is a book for people. It's a book, the only people, maybe Nazis. Nazis wouldn't like this book. But you know what? Fuck Nazis. So, The Book Thief, it's for everybody. It's just a fantastic, wonderful book. There's just the writing chops that he pulls out, the things that he does with structure, the things that he does with character, the themes of it and the way that he gets at those themes. It's just, it's a tour de force. I said on a recent episode that I'm really looking forward to his next book. There's a part of me that's terrified of his next book because this was so good. I just don't want anything to ever take away from it. So that's my number one.
Nice, nice. Okay, and I'm going completely anticlimactic here with my number one. Surprise! So, yeah, my number one is Zero History by William Gibson.
Really?
Yeah, and so I definitely read better books this year, you know?
Suarez. Yeah, because you were really sort of like lukewarm about this.
Yeah, curious. So Suarez was better, Zatoon was better. I really, really actually dug Matterhorn, although that's such a tough sell. But in terms of books that stayed with me after I put them down, Zero History is probably the one. Because the idea of that like temporal compression and distribution that kind of like forms the reason for the title and stuff, I just think is fascinating, and that has lingered with me in both a work context and a personal context, and thinking about the internet and just thinking about stuff. And perhaps because, you know, perhaps the structure and the incompleteness of that book plays into that. Because those things, like, there was a bunch of things that were kind of mulligans in that story and weren't, not mulligans,
MacGuffins?
MacGuffins, in that story and just kind of never went anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so there was, like, a false expectation that they would, and that might be why it stuck with me, but I've just been thinking about that story and about Spook Country, a lot. Just in writing and blogging and stuff. It's got me teed up and very excited for Gary Steingart's super sad true love story. And I just got Jennifer Egan's The Goon Squad today.
I'm calling that one. It's on my nightstand right now.
Oh!
Put it down, bitch.
I'll take it back, I guess. So, you know, both Steingart and Egan are both like near future, non-futures kind of, you know. There was an article in the New York Times just on the weekend talking about how it's really difficult to write in 2020 or whatever, like, our authors aren't looking out far enough, and I guess McSweeney's, of course, as McSweeney is known to do, rise to the challenge and did a full episode, or they collected a bunch of stories, far future stories. But, you know, Zero History, Egan, Steingart are near future stories. And I hadn't heard about Egan at all, and the whole PowerPoint thing is crazy. Anyway, so I'm also keen to, like, revisit other Gibson. I have read Gibson, but the titles I've read don't actually overlap with the titles that you've read, I don't think. So that's on the agenda for 2011. And so, you know, I'm not saying that it's the best book, but it's my number one. I'm going with it.
Hey, no, that's totally valid, and like I said, I loved Spook Country and Zero History this year. I just couldn't disentangle them from one another in order to make a specific recommendation, but that's maybe a false distinction. I think that's totally valid.
Well, I don't know. It's like, it's a hard book to recommend to people that aren't in, like, you know, you're gonna meet and know the person, like, it's not for everyone, right? So that person that's going to pick up and enjoy it is really specific, and you're either going to know that someone's going to love it or they won't.
Right. So, and they've probably read it already.
Yeah, and so it's hard to talk about in a kind of public context like this, but whatever.
Well, that's it for another episode, and that's it for our first year of shows. We want to thank everybody for listening, and we hope you'll join us next year because we've got some exciting guests lined up to recommend books and talk about other interesting things. And in a world in which there are 100,000 approximately English language fiction novels published each year, not to mention nonfiction and assorted others, the chances are we won't run out of awesome books to talk about anytime soon. You can check out our website at enthusiasticast.com for more episodes and more content, and you can reach us by sending an email to hello@enthusiasticast.com. Until next week, hoping you have an enthusiastic new year. I'm John.
And I'm Mark.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.